Okay, well, I'm Olivier Deschutes. I'm the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food since the 1st of May 2008. And my mission is to report to the UN General Assembly and to the UN Human Rights Council about how to realize the right to food. And these reports I prepare contain recommendations to governments about how to address the challenge we are facing and the challenge on which you are inquiring. What I would like to emphasize is very simple. We have gone through a very serious global food crisis, which is still with us. The number of people who are hungry has been increasing over the last few years, and because of this crisis, we are now reaching almost the mark of 1 billion people hungry. The crisis is still with us because the prices are still quite high on domestic markets, and because low prices are not a solution, given that many of those who are hungry, the majority of those who are hungry, are small producers producing food. 50% are smallholders who cultivate small plots of land for a living. But this crisis confronts us not with one, but with two problems. And I fear that if we miss one part of the equation, we will provide the wrong answers. The one problem we are facing is indeed how to feed the planet. The World Bank has estimated that we need to double the production of food by 2050, increase it by 50% by 2030 in order to meet increasing demand, increasing population, changing diets, the arrival of a middle class in large countries which consume more animal protein. This is one part of the equation, but we will fail entirely in our task if we do not also increase accessibility of food for those who are hungry, and if we produce food in ways which are not sustainable environmentally. Agriculture produces 30% of man-made greenhouse gas emissions. It consumes 70% of fresh water. And if we react to the challenge of having to produce more food by not taking into account the social and environmental dimensions, we will fail. To the Human Rights Council and to the General Assembly, I make recommendations based on the human right to adequate food. Now, I'm not naive. I know we cannot legislate against hunger. But the right to food is hugely important because it can guide us in making the right choices about which policy choices to make, which kind of agricultural development to promote, how to address the issue of hunger. The right to food is important because, first of all, it obliges us to focus on the situation of the most vulnerable, not to focus only on the increase in volumes produced, but also by asking who produces and for the benefit of whom, whose incomes are raised. If we double the amount of food produced, but we don't tackle the issues of inequality, lack of purchasing power for the poor, we will simply not do anything to combat hunger effectively. The right to food is important also because it creates accountability mechanisms. It obliges us to keep on the right track. It is a counterweight to the marginalization of small-scale farmers in the political process, in which often they are unrepresented and which they are unable to influence. The right to food is a right which has been developed since 1996, the first World Food Summit, which was convened in Rome in 1996, and it has now matured and has a very clear and detailed normative content, which I shall not explain in detail, but which I'm ready to explain further if you wish. The reason why the right to food has been developing as a normative concept since the 1990s is because of the very influential work of the Indian economist, Nobel Prize winner 1998, Amartya Sen. In his work, Poverty and Famine of 1981, he shows very effectively that hunger is not simply a problem of food availability. It's not simply a problem of having enough food to feed the population. It's also a problem of accessibility, and therefore producing more will not serve to combat hunger if we do not tackle inequalities and the mechanisms which produce exclusion and marginalization. And he also shows in his book, and this is a diagnosis which many today share, that hunger is the result often not of natural phenomena, but of the result of bad policy choices, and therefore the accountability of governments, transparency in decision-making, monitoring of governments, and the development of tools which ensure that governments are held accountable to the population can serve to realize the right to food and to combat hunger. Therefore, we need an answer to the global food crisis. But this answer should not be limited to a humanitarian dimension, providing food to the hungry, providing seeds, providing fertilizers. Neither should it be limited to investing in rural development and in agricultural services and infrastructure. It also should include an institutional dimension, an institutional strategy to improve targeting, accountability, monitoring, in recognition that much of the failure of agriculture to achieve its potential is essentially institutional, as recognized by the OECD 2006 report promoting pro-poor growth. Now, this has a number of implications for developing states where food insecurity essentially remains, for the community of donors, industrialized states, and thirdly, for the international community as a whole. For the sake of time, I shall not discuss the situation of developing countries and what they should do to ensure that the right to food is effectively realized. But there are a number of prescriptions which are specifically addressed to them in order to ensure that they work in favor of the poorest and the most marginalized. What I would like to emphasize is the message to the community of donors, OECD states, those who are in a position to help. I think that the right to food approach may be hugely important, not only to guide us in our choices about where to invest our efforts, but also about how to do so. Where to invest our efforts? Again, this is something I could detail, but very summarily, there are coexisting, and you will hear about, three models of agricultural development. Three ways to increase agricultural production. One is referred to as the Green Revolution model, and this refers to a model of development which relies on large quantities of external inputs, improved seeds, chemical fertilizers, pesticides, which is one model promoted by a number of public and private donors. A second model puts many hopes on genetically modified crops and the virtues of, you know, technological research in improved seeds. And the third model is one which Janice Jiggins will develop much better than I will be able to, but is the agroecological approach, using conservation agriculture, participatory research, participatory plant breeding. My sense is that the two first models have been attracting most attention, most funding, most efforts from the private and the public sector. And we need to ensure that these models do not crowd out alternative models which focus not only on the qualities of the plant, but also on the interaction between the plant and the ecosystems. And I would like to mention that there is now increasing evidence that agroecological modes of production can be hugely effective in raising the yields in a way which is both socially and environmentally sustainable. For example, in Malawi, the use of nitrogen-fixing trees has made it possible to increase very significantly production for 100,000 smallholders in Malawi. The yields were increased in average from 1.1 ton per hectare to 3.7 tons per hectare in Malawi, thanks to the use of fertilizing trees. Another example is Tanzania. In the western provinces of Tanzania, an agroforestry project was developed since the late 1980s, and 350,000 hectares have been rehabilitated, raising the incomes of local farmers by some $500 per year per household, which is a very important sum in that region. So I think that taking into account the right to food is important in directing our choices between different models of agricultural development. We also should use the right to food in order to understand not just where to invest, but also how to invest. The right to food, essentially, is a tool which could help us better take into account in our development cooperation policies the needs of the most vulnerable. Essentially, development policies for the moment are based on the idea of mutual accountability between donor countries and recipient countries, the partners. We need to move towards a triangular model of accountability in which both donors and recipient governments are accountable to the ultimate beneficiary. I'm wrapping up just to say this. There's a very nice sentence which is attributed to Mark Twain, where he says, if all you have is a hammer, then all problems start to look like nails. And I think this is the risk we are facing. We have a number of recipes, a number of ways of doing things and of addressing a crisis such as the one we've been seeing. And the right to food is not a magic bullet, but it can certainly enrich our toolbox. I think investments without the right institutional framework will not be successful. And the right to food essentially enables us to provide a more sustainable, a better answer, I believe, to the challenge we are facing. And I'm delighted to be able to provide you with more details about what this might imply. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Lynn. That's a good start. I'm sure there'll be questions around that in a few minutes.